One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Chapter 32, Book 133 of the Barber Family Saga. Today, wedding day in the afternoon. For well over an hour, the well-informed Mrs. Emily Stewart, with mother-of-pearl opera glasses ready for instant action, has been sitting beside her front window surveying Seacliff Drive as she chatters with an unexpected luncheon guest, one Ross Farnsworth. This incident, along with other complicating factors, has provided Jack Barber with a dreary period of acute frustration, broken at last by the ringing of the telephone in his living room.
Yes, hello.
Jack, Nikki's here now.
Oh, thanks, Bob. Be right over.
He hastens out the back door, hurtles into his car, and with a last look at Emily's window, drives swiftly 6 blocks straight down to his sister Claudia's, where he meets with another frustration and finds, as he goes in the front door, that he will be unable to speak freely.
Yes, I told your mother, Claudia.
Oh, no. Claude, where's Nikki?
After all, since it's a February wedding, it is better to have it over here. My garden couldn't have produced such an abundance of flowers if I'd planned the year.
Pardon me, Dad. Jack? Oh, there you are.
Hi, where's Nikki?
I'll get him. He's bringing in the wedding gifts. Excuse me.
Yes. Oh, your hair is on end.
It's not too surprising.
Oh, anything wrong?
Oh, the usual wedding day hassle with a few new ones added.
Ross Farnsworth still sitting there in the window with Emily Stewart waiting for 4 o'clock?
Yep, still there.
On the stroke of 4, he'll go over and harass Joan on her wedding day.
Well, Dad, the court gave him rights of visitation. Nothing you can do about that.
I'll tell you why he's at Emily's. He's consumed with curiosity about Raymond Borden. Emily will be a fountain of information. Insanely jealous, that's what he is.
Imagine any divorced man is jealous of his successor.
I'm sorry. Claudia said you called over an hour ago.
Hi, Nikki. Yeah, a couple items I'd like to go over.
And, Dad, may I have your advice out here? Will you come with me?
Yes. Very well. Excuse me, please.
Surely.
Yeah, sure.
I'll give you some advice right now, Claudia. When there's something I'm not to know, there's no need to work out elaborate stratagems to get me out of the room. Let's simplify it. Whistle, I'll go.
Dad, don't be ridiculous. Now, what do you think about locking off this entrance?
Let me close the door. I don't want to get people alarmed, but Ross Farnsworth has a gun with him.
How do you know?
Sharon. She was looking over the push buttons in Ross's car. There's a blue automatic in the glove compartment.
Wouldn't that be carrying concealed weapons?
Yeah.
Well, then, the police...
Oh, now wait. Police, reporters, morning papers, and headlines.
Oh.
Ex-husband arrested with gun at scene of Seacliff wedding. They'd have a field day with that one.
All right. Well, what do we do? Steal it?
Well, I'd have got it before now, but Ross and Emily are sitting right in the...
Boy, Arson with his hard car.
Oh, hi, Uncle Nicky. Uncle Jack.
Oh, Pinky, hello there.
Came over to see if there's anything I can do. Where's Aunt Claudia?
Wait a minute.
Sir?
Still looked young and nimble enough for a bit of thievery, wouldn't you say, Nicky?
Thievery?
Oh, Pinky, I heard someone come in. Hello there, you're up early.
You'll have to excuse him, Claude.
I came over to see if there's something I can do, and I guess there is.
Yeah, he's going into conference with me on the back porch. Oh, Dad, I didn't see you.
Yes, traffic is building up. Oh, well, Pinky, you're up early.
Hi, Grandfather. Well, what do you want, Uncle Jack?
Let's find a sanctuary somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Dad, tell Nicky what you just told me. That wonderful phrase, paranoidal overtones, you know?
Well, it sounds alarming.
Oh, yes, yes, Nicholas. I quoted a phrase of Paul's which came popping back into my mind. At the time Ross first deserted Joan, Paul called him a borderline psychotic with paranoidal overtones.
Isn't that descriptive? Takes care of everything.
Well, it has a frighteningly clinical side.
Well, I say to Claudia, what other words could be used to describe a man who leers and boasts of his skill with pistols? I'd have him thrown in jail. Call it prime predicament.
Well, there's one difficulty, Father Barber. His traits are only by implication. The police can't arrest a man because his former in-laws consider him unstable and assume that he may go berserk. And as Jack points out, you call in officials and you also call in the press. And we've had more than enough of that.
Nicky?
Yes, Jack, I'm right here.
Pinky will run that errand for us.
Why not? I came over here looking for something to do.
We'll see you later.
You want a car?
Oh, mine's out in front. Come along, Pink.
See you.
I'll go out with you. I'll get the door.
Yeah. Do you know what they're up to?
No, I really don't, Dad.
Curious?
Are you?
Certainly. silly. They are trying not to worry us. Only makes it worse. Here it is. I will match your $10 contribution to the community chest that I find out before you do.
Do you think that's fair? You've had so much more practice.
Bet? Yes or no?
Yes.
Shake hands. You're right. They have forced me into deductive reasoning. This has something to do with Russ Farnsworth and a gun. You mark my words.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
There are many isms in the world of today. Some good, some bad. But there is one ism there can never be enough of. Humanitarianism. Here's a little episode illustrating how a United States Air Force sergeant and his wife combined a bit of humanitarianism with Americanism. And how, even though handicapped by a language barrier, their efforts worked out very well. It all happened on a dingy street in Fukuoka, Japan. A Japanese couple suddenly dashed out into the street, the woman clutching a baby in her arms. The couple signaled frantically, but the traffic flowed by, ignoring their efforts for help. Finally, one car came to a stop. The occupants were Tech Sergeant Oliver A. Morris and his wife, out to enjoy a late afternoon and evening off duty. What moved Sergeant Morris to stop? Later he found that hard to explain, unless perhaps it just seemed the human thing to do, for neither he nor his wife knew any Japanese. Yet those pathetic figures in the street somehow conveyed great distress and urgency. Sergeant Morris sensed there was something to be done and in a hurry. Much later, he learned the baby had been seized with convulsions. The parents had rushed to a small hospital nearby, and its only doctor was out. They knew of another physician a mile and a half away, and were trying to flag down a taxi when Sergeant Morris came along. The airman bundled them into his car and sped off in their search for a doctor, whom they finally succeeded in locating. When the spasms of the baby were finally checked, the woman looked up with brimming eyes and said, as an interpreter translated, "My husband and I, we have been afraid of Americans before. Now we are glad to know such fine people." It cost the Morrises much of the carefree evening they had previously planned, but their unselfish actions towards that Japanese family brought a feeling of goodwillism that will never be forgotten. Sergeant Morris and his wife also gave all of us a thought to remember. We are Americans. As we go, so goes America.
It's 40 minutes later. Ross Farnsworth's car is still parked at the curb outside Emily Stewart's. The front curtains, which had been drawn aside, are now back in place. But figures can be seen in the background. Jack and his brother-in-law, Nicholas Lacey, waiting in the front hall at the family home, are becoming impatient. Nicky glances at the grandfather clock.
Where is the lad?
I still can't see him. It's my guess he got into the car from this side while we were coming up the back steps. He's afraid to move.
What would Pinky's instructions?
Get the gun, that's all.
I'll take full responsibility if anything goes wrong.
There'll be enough trouble to go around. We'll all be sharing it.
Honey!
Dad, she's not around. Let's go in the library. Here in the library, Nicky's with me. Come on in.
I once asked Claudia if she couldn't answer, why do you still keep things from the old gentleman with force of habit?
Well, he somehow adds to the general confusion. We'd be slowed down by a debate on ethics.
Yes, I know. He's thorough, but he's sound.
Well, occasionally you don't have time to be thorough.
What is Pinky up to?
Where did you see him?
He moved so fast I couldn't be sure. I thought I saw him leaping across the street from Emily Stewart's.
Going where?
Into your house, I thought. Does he know you're in here?
I guess not. Look out the window, Nicky. Is he over there?
No. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Here he comes, through the hedge.
Here.
Well, I'll go let him in.
The door isn't locked, Jack. Jack?
Sir?
What is going on? Why don't you tell me? I'd like to help.
Well, Dad, you tell him, Nicky. Oh, Pinky. Here in the library.
Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Wow. How long was I over there?
We were told Ross is carrying a weapon in his car.
Yes, no surprise to me.
Well, they were both sitting in the front... Well, right there in the front window. So I waited to duck across. Then, when I got in the car, I didn't dare move. I had to scrunch way down and wait. Brother, every time I peeked out, they were watching the street.
Where's the gun?
It wasn't there, Uncle Jack.
Oh, I say.
No, sir. Gloves... and a box of bullets, but no gun. After Sharon saw it there, he probably remembered and went out and got it. So he must have it with him.
And at 4 o'clock he will call at Jones' house with a gun in his pocket. Reporters be hanged. Jack, Nicholas, get on the phone. Let's call the police.
Barbers in just a moment.
This is Jim Amici. Are you from Alabama? In the year 1540, Hernando de Soto and his band of treasure seekers were the first white men to look upon the part of the New World which is now the state of Alabama. In the more than 400 years since de Soto and his men made their exploration, Alabama has grown to a state with a population of more than 3 million people. It's become the leading heavy industry state in the southern part of the United States. Birmingham, its principal manufacturing center, is called the Pittsburgh of the South. Alabama's a leading producer of lumber, marble, petroleum, and dolomite. Its farmlands produce cotton, corn, hay, and sweet potatoes. Alabama, the 22nd state to join the Union, has contributed much to the heritage of America. In the years ahead, Alabama will add much to America's future.
In the library, Jack tosses a glance at Nicky as if to ask if he's satisfied. Minutes have slipped away and the situation has entered the predicted state of confusion.
I say commit Ross for observation. At least you'd have him locked up during the wedding.
And if he isn't psychotic, he can sue you for the gold fillings in your teeth.
May I come in?
Sure. Big debate. Everybody will.
I want Ross locked up before he takes it into his head to harm the children.
You're a little late, Dad. He's driving into Jones' driveway right this minute.
Well, excuse me.
I'll go with you.
Hey, wait, I'm coming too.
Shut the door, Pinky.
Huh?
Well, what's all that? Or don't you know?
Certainly I know. Certainly I know. I'll collect later. You owe $10 to charity. Jack, Nicholas, I'll talk to Ross while you call the police. Yes, yes, wait, let me handle this.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 33, Book 133, Wedding Day at 4 p.m., Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. Thank you.